All right, next thing on the agenda.
Very good.
Review of protective covenants. Sorry, Walt.
Oh, he did a good job.
Okay, I have placed in each of your places a long document, 18 pages. Let me explain to you how this works. There are pages, copies out as well. There's another copy. Couple more here. What I have done is to take three documents and put them side by side. The first column on the left is headed current. These are our current protective covenants. And then I've taken the Hall Committee recommendation and the Clarkson Committee recommendation that we distributed to the membership, and I put those side by side, tried to line up the language, and then and highlight the differences between them by underlining any differences in language. So if there's nothing underlined or highlighted in those two columns, they agree exactly on the wording. And then in the fourth column on the right, I have what I have classed as the proposed language, where I have made some attempt to reconcile differences or to suggest alternative language, or to suggest some kind of something that I think would make sense. That is, those are simply talking points. That's my views or my suggestions for a way to approach it. But obviously, there'll be a lot of discussion about it. So on this first page, for example, you have our current language on the left. You have identical language in the two proposals for describing what's in there. I don't know. Now, maybe there's a good reason why we have to break out each of the plats separately, but I just said, look, we're talking blocks 1 through 305 as described on plats A, B, C, D, E, and F, and all the common ground. So I tried to simplify it that way. There is no disagreement on the term, which is Article 1. And then when we get down to Article 2, there were differences in the language. In the Hall report, the word inseparably was included. In the Clarkson report, the word inseparably was removed, and there was language added about Kane County's subdivision of lots, or allowing subdivisions, allowing 10-acre lots in this zone. The language that I suggested there was to say, was to remove all reference to the size of the lot, and simply to say that the if you own property, you're a member, and every owner gets one vote.
And that may be fine, Larry. However, that wording is all in the existing ordinance today. All that wording should perhaps be over in column 1.
All which wording?
All the wording you underlined.
In which column?
In my column.
Column.
Okay, it's in which ordinance?
Number 2.
Okay, which ordinance are you referring to, though?
When you say the one that's in force today.
But it's not in our... It's not in the language today.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the one that's on the website at any rate.
Well, that may be true. I don't know what it is, but that is in the existing one today.
Maybe that's something we should check on.
Barbara?
I've got things for you.
We have the amended.
Yeah, actually, I thought it was awesome.
Updated.
I'm sorry, I wasn't sure.
Okay, Dale, if I understood you correctly, you're saying that the language about if Kane County permits subdivision lots to 10 acres, that language is in the current protective covenants?
I believe it is. I had that in my card, too.
We made a change years ago.
About 5-6 years ago?
That's right. It was voted to be that way.
Dale's right.
Yeah,
that was voted that way.
Copy you were using it.
The website it wasn't there. Okay. Well,
but regardless,
in any event, my suggestion, again, I don't know how you want to handle the discussion on this, but the differences in the language between the two was the inclusion of words inseparably in one and this language about Kane County's
But we still need to include what we had already passed, but we still need to have that kind of difference between them. We still had to include the stuff that we already voted on.
Right now, even if it's something we passed before, whether it's in force or been proposed, right now it's pretty much a wash. We're gonna do a new set and include what needs to be included and exclude what needs to be excluded, whether it's in or not in.
Right.
So that doesn't matter. So
So from my perspective, there were two issues here. One is, is it possible to be a member of the association without owning property? And the second question was, do we want to have fractional voting? And my view is, I think getting into fractional voting is a mistake. I think if you own property, you ought to get a vote. But I do think that the membership is tied to ownership of property. So maybe we should stop at that and talk through the issues around this definition of membership, and then we can move on. Is that a reasonable way mm-hmm. we can sort of pick these up one at a time?
What if we go through these page by page, and if anybody has items, you know, make your own little mark off the side, and let's get all the way through it so we know what
okay.
it's about.
We can do that.
And then
we'll be here longer.
You know, okay. it may be a fact that we have to.
However,
in the
two documents that they were presented, I think what Larry's just talking about, that is the if we can overcome that issue,
yeah.
I think that most of the rest of the issues are not the issue.
And Larry, I'm not objecting. I just wanted to call that for your attention. I'm not objecting one way or the other.
Point well taken. If I got the wrong language in the left column,
yeah,
I'm sorry. I was working for what
this
was.
Really good, Larry. You got it.
Yeah.
Very
good. Okay, the third one, land preservation. I'm on page 3.
Mm-hmm.
This would be Article 3 or Section 3. I've highlighted in Phil's document, Phil's committee put in an example there, and I didn't see.
Why expand it?
Yeah, why have an example?
I agree with that part.
I just said that the board can regulate the use of any portion of the common areas or other association property by rule and regulation, except
and I personally have no problem
with
that. I was just
stuff.
Kind of trying to illustrate it.
Right.
A couple of wordiness that we need the
To eliminate the words, we're trying to condense here.
So that's
say on number 3, or we're just reviewing it right now.
I'm just
okay.
sort of explaining what mm-hmm. with on the livestock and pets, it wasn't a big difference. Phil's committee authorized horses and cows to free range. Dale's committee said horses can't free range, cows can be free range. I sort of put the two together and said horses can't free range, authorized cows can free range. Because I don't think we want people hauling cows up there and just turning them loose. We want to know what's going on.
And I think that's something, I don't really remember the thing about the horses. I got by.
Why are you supposed to be that way?
I don't think it was in my mind. So I have no...
Okay.
Objection, I like the way you
put
it.
On the sanitation stuff, there was a minor difference with regard to ashes and garbage cans, but the language in Phil's was exactly the same as the language in the current, at least the one that I was working from on the website, and I retained that. So I kept ashes and garbage cans being clean in the language. I made some changes on the nuisances and signs stuff. And if you look at the two center columns, you can see the underlined language shows you the differences. The phrase "for advertising purposes" is included in Phil's. There's specifically both of them allow one for sale sign, and Phil's allows no hunting signs, and Dale's doesn't make any reference to hunting. It does talk about private property and no trespassing signs. My suggestion is that we specifically allow one for sale sign and that we indicate that private property, no trespassing, no hunting signs are prohibited unless they have specifically been authorized in writing by the board. That way we leave ourselves an opportunity if somebody comes in with a specific situation that we can address that. The firearms, how to characterize the differences here, okay, maybe you should just sort of, well, Phil's language talks about discharging firearms in common areas only allowed in areas designated by the association, and that the other discharge on a member's personal property should comply with the laws. Dale's language Firearms should be allowed only within areas designated by the association. Safety practices must be exercised. I didn't see that there was a lot of need to stress the safety practices. I think that if you're complying with the law, that's part of it. Unless, I guess, you're Vice President of the United States.
I'd have to find my copy, but I don't remember this. Do you remember, Barbara, that firearm thing? Designated areas? Because I kind of agreed with Larry that you can't keep a person from using a firearm on their property.
The simpleness of it is so much better. Why do we need to have all that?
So, like, designating areas, like, okay.
A shooting range over here or over.
No, but for instance, true confession. You know, my lot 44, way up on top of the hill. The last thing for me and my kids to do is to shoot skeet off of that hill, you know? But, so is that not in compliance with the designated area?
Well, the way he's got it written, the discharge of firearms shall be allowed only in areas designated by the association. That's in regard to association land.
Right.
The discharge of firearms on members' personal lots and or designated common areas shall be in compliance with all Utah state.
That's okay.
I like it.
Yeah.
Sorry. Now, in Dale's, or in Phil's version, there was a section on hunting. Dale's did not have that section on hunting. And so the language that I've included, I think it is important for us. Hunting is a big enough issue that I think we have to have something in there that talks about it. And in this case, I think I've changed the wording a bit, though. Maybe I haven't.
That's a question about the ranch. Do they get a specified amount of tires?
The Deer Springs Ranch is one member of the Ponce Mountain Landowners Association, which there's actually 168 members of that owners association, of the Ponce Mountain Landowners Association.
But are we allowed any tags?
We're not. That group, the Ponce Mountain Landowners Association, is given anywhere from 14 to 35 tags by the state.
Annually.
They sell those tags or auction them off and then divvy up the money back to the members, back to Deer Springs Ranch, our proportion.
And what's our proportion?
It ranges between $2,000 and $4,000, depending on how many tags they had to sell and what they sold for. Last year it was about $4,000.
What I'm trying to find out is if you can get access to those tags.
You can through the auction. The Ponce Mountain Landowners Association auctions them off, usually in April or May, and that may be something we want to put on our newsletter or on our website just to say
That's
the PLA.
I never understood about that until I read this. So, I mean, I'm sure there's more people like me that would probably like to have a Ponce Mountain deer tag. You know, I mean, they're scarce as anything.
So the one modification that I made in Phil's language was to indicate that owners desiring to keep hunters off their lot may request permission to post no hunting, so that makes it consistent with the previous language about signs. But I have allowed that we do have the authority to permit hunting, and it'll take place every place unless people specifically ask us to keep it off their lawn. And the violation and penalty sec clause in 9, Phil had some language about the directors and officers of the association are empowered to assess, collect, and annual dues. There's a whole section on annual dues. I didn't see any reason to have that language repeated here, so I used the language that was consistent between the two and left it at that. Improvements. Oh, the other thing that I... The other thing that I have done here, just as a general observation, the existing language and least Phil's copy makes reference to Schedule A and property described in Schedule A. I've eliminated all those references, and I'm just using the reference that happens in the preamble so that it says, you know, all this property is included, just because I know people have had questions, so what's in Schedule A? And that's never been attached to any of the documents, so I just eliminated it all.
And that doesn't dilute the attachment of what's being said to those properties, right?
Well, this is right at the very first it states.
It's what it is, yeah.
Right. I can see. Okay, so the language I've suggested on improvements is that improvements described on property, improvements to property described herein shall conform in every particular to the zoning ordinance of King County as well as applicable amendments to the protective covenants when property adopted by vote of the association. Division of property was consistent across the two documents, so I've just moved it over. Now, the language on easements did differ. Phil has in his motion that utility easements, except other than utility easements, no easement over association common property may be granted to any public or private entity or individual without approval. 75% of the vote of the membership. I included the language, but I cut it down to 2/3. Just because I thought that was a, something closer to reasonable compromise. Obviously, others may disagree.
Just real quick, in that area, there's been three or four instances in the history of the ranch where a private lot owner had to get an easement across association land. Who's down across the canyon from you, Brent?
Acres. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're the most recent example. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any, I don't know that there's anybody in the whole association that's been out of shape that the board gave them permission to go across a corner of association land to get to their lot. I'd hate to hold people like that up for a membership vote, even if it's 2/3 or 50% or 30% vote. I don't know that, I just don't see any situations arising where that would become necessary.
I think this is something that ought to be the purview of the board. They ought to be able to make that decision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sir. Your Meadow Canyon is a good example, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
what... Well, I thought this was referring to private owners.
This was referring
to private... No, this is referring to all association owners.
Yeah, I think that this would document for Dan Wirt what he wants to do with Meadow Canyon.
That's right. It clarifies what is now ambiguous about how such easements would be granted. And obviously, you know, I've given you suggested language. You had suggestions. Phil has suggestions. This is clearly a point where we're going to have to talk about. Does it make sense? Is it
okay, I did not read in there the public. Well,
doesn't make sense.
To any public or private entity. Now, I will tell you, I had to get an easement from the BLM, and that took me 2 years. That obviously, and part of that was the board's fault, because my application got rolled in with some of the other stuff the ranch was doing. But anyway, so
If we needed 200 membership votes to approve your, it'd take longer than 2 years.
Oh, yeah, you're not kidding.
So, but that wasn't across the association land. That was across BLM land. So you're saying the association is actually slower than the federal government. But, okay. So that's the point where we're going to obviously need to come back and talk. On the dwellings, I think the language was consistent between the two, and I just moved it over. Rules and regulations. Let me give you my sense of what Phil was saying, what Dale was saying, and what I'm suggesting here. Phil was saying that rules and regulations have to be explicitly approved by the members. Dale was saying, no, they don't. That the first go-around will submit to the membership for ratification, but after that, the board can make the changes. My suggestion is that the board can make the changes. We don't have to submit anything to the membership right off the bat. What we should do, though, is give the members a chance to comment on what we're proposing in the rules and regulations before we formally implement it, just to make sure that we haven't missed something. And I've added the language that any specific rule or regulation could be overturned by a majority of the membership at a meeting.
And that was my concern. I thought that's what I was trying to get in there, is that, okay, during the year the board observes and they see, well, we got to change this rule or that, and so the annual meeting comes around, and then the board suggests these changes. And
But your language I take to read, I read as saying that the membership has to ratify it.
Right.
And initially.
And what I'm suggesting is that the board can say, this is what we're going to do, and the membership can say, no, you can't, if they choose to, but absent that, the board goes ahead and does it.
Are you giving 45 days for the membership?
Give 45 days for people to comment, they can raise any concerns they have, and then at the next annual meeting, or if there's a special meeting, if they really object to what the board has done, they can
overturn it.
They can,
I think,
overturn.
That accomplishes what I had in mind, because originally I had, it was kind of, Larry was concerned about it, it was kind of a negative way I was saying, unless we had so many negative votes against it, you know, and that's basically what you're saying in this other thing, right?
What I'm saying is that the membership's going to have to take positive action to say, we don't like that, we want it on the ballot,
yeah.
And then the membership's going to have to vote it down.
By a majority vote.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the key there, rather than the more than 50%.
On that, Larry, was to take the existing rules and regulations and rubber stamp them into this program, that the rules and regulations need to be worked on and modified and so forth. And that was my main objection to this, is that we automatically include the rules and regulations as they exist. But I think there's enough errors in it that we need to address that individually.
My feeling was that it's been hard enough to go through these other things and drag back through all that. It doesn't leave out the chance to change the rules and regs like he's proposing.
That may be our next project.
Yeah, right. But we had to have a starting point. And since we've been functioning with these rules and regs for 3 years or so, okay, let's get them ratified. If they're not, they're not. You know, if they are, that's a starting point, and then move forward with changes like Dale's suggesting here and there, and then in the way that I like the way he's got it here.
So this isn't saying the implementation or the description of the rules and regulations, but if there need to be a change, how it would be acted upon in our rules.
I just felt that we had so much to discuss, we had to start somewhere.
Yeah.
That was my
Okay, and the accountability of members, the language is quite different between the two documents, and I felt one was too long and the other was too short, in my view. So I said, the language that I have here is that each member shall be liable to the association for any damage to the common area, improvements thereon, or another member's lot, sustained by reason of the negligence or willful misconduct of the member, the family, invitees, guests, both minor and adult. I think that accomplishes in fewer words what Phil is trying to do, and I don't think that it's inconsistent with what Dale was suggesting. It says people need to be responsible for their behavior and the people they bring along. Damages to the common area. Dale had a language in there, but at least the copy that I was mailed, I was confused because there's a colon. It makes reference to how things will be handled in the following manner, colon, and then there's nothing. And so I didn't do anything with that because I wasn't exactly sure what it was trying to accomplish that isn't accomplished elsewhere. So if I missed something, then we can...
What I felt on that one was that when it went into accountability of members, where he had this, each member's liable, and he did that really short, this was actually a continuation of the same thing, only separated into two different... Could that be read that way? That's the way I felt it was. So the way you did it in 15 kind of still summarized both of those.
So would there be a need to put that?
I don't know, but you... What do you think?
Or the way he had it written in his...
I have to read this in the quiet of my...
No, both of it. Thank you. Okay. Anyway, that's the way I read through it, Larry. I thought that he was broke out into two separate sections, but it actually addressed the same. Well, that was my...
Okay. Then there is language about the creation of the assessment obligation, and Phil's language talks about a single kind of assessment. And Dale's language talks about four different kinds of assessments, and I like that. I like the fact that we're clear that there's more than one kind of assessment, so I included that. Dale has included language in here about each assessment together with the interest and costs and reasonable attorney's fees shall also be and remain the personal obligation of the person who is the owner of such property, and that even if it's a lot is sold, that the owner will, or the seller will retain that obligation. I don't see that there's any way for us to enforce that. If we once lose our ability to lose the tie between the assessment and the lot, then I don't know what we can do to go out and collect that money. And that's why I have not included that language in the description of the assessments in the stuff that's in the right-hand column, just because there's...
That will be one that we need to discuss,
okay.
Because that's one big issue.
The other note is that in Dale's language, he uses the term membership as opposed to lots, and I have gone back to lots because, again, I don't think memberships are tangible enough for us to be able to enforce a financial obligation, but I think lots definitely are. Annual assessments was the language was the same, so I used that budget. There was one minor difference down at the end in Phil. Everything was due on March the 1st, and in Dale's, it was due on or before March the 1st, and I think on or before was reasonable. Delinquent dues. Dale added language at the end that talked about unpaid memberships will be auctioned on April 15th. And I took that language out because I'm not sure what we would be auctioning. I'm not sure what it means to auction the memberships on the first year and the second year and then actually sell them in the third year.
That was an item that had been talked about before I was on the board 2 or 3 years ago, that the association needed all the money, for their budget, and they couldn't operate unless they had a predictable income, and this would allow all units to be paid for, possibly, by the 15th of April, by the owner or by somebody else using it, so that the budget would be a little bit more predictable. That's why I put it in there.
In other words, someone else could buy that ownership for that.
Or lease it or pay.
Yeah, and then the owner would have to pay them back some way so that it would keep an even flow.
Well, it may be that if Shauna doesn't pay hers this year and Phil pays it, that year's taken care of, the budget's taken care of, she has not sold it, she didn't lose ownership of it.
No.
But the association has the income, and he would probably use her 2 weeks in the cabins. Or whatever.
But then
why don't I just give her the money directly if I got something arranged like that? I mean, but I don't know.
You could.
I don't think we want to let the property owner off the hook that easy. Because if he says, I'm not going to use that 2 weeks this year, so I'm not going to pay. And even though somebody else pays for it to use the cabin, it's still, I think, like a seller.
And then does that tie by paying that assessment tie to who gets the vote at the annual meeting?
Let's leave that. Move on. Some people might think that's where it is.
Okay, the special assessments, the language on board approved special assessments was identical for items 1I, double I, so I just moved that language over. Item 2, approved by the association. There is a difference. Phil's language left out the term by proxy. Dale's language included that in the vote, and I finessed the issue by saying the vote of the members. However we decide voting will work, which I think is something that will be resolved in the bylaws. If it's a legitimate vote, then it should count. I'll let you there.
Lot owners.
Sorry?
Lot owners and non-members.
Well, there, I've attempted to use those terms interchangeably, whether we talk about owner or member. Because I think I've tried to make it clear up front that if you're a lot owner, you are a member, and the only way to be a member is
to be a member without being a lot owner.
That's correct.
Is that delineated in here?
Yes, that's up above. Dale has some language about notifying members of meetings and saying before any special assessment is levied, the board shall deliver the notice of the meeting. I found that to be, there's a quorum requirement that is reduced over time. I wasn't sure that didn't just add some conflicts and create some.
That came out of one of the previous documents. I'm not convinced of it either.
So I left it out.
Good.
Dale did have language about a corrective assessment, and I like that option, and so I've used his language here as well, that essentially it says if the board determines that somebody has damaged the common property or damaged somebody else's lot, and we have to come in and act as a board to correct the situation, that we can then assess the individuals or their owners for that. Mm-hmm. Okay, the language on non-payment of assessments. This actually, there is, even though it looks like there's a difference in the length, all of the language in the two center columns appeared in both documents, which is why there's nothing highlighted. It was just moved around a different place. So I have retained the language and what is different between them actually appears someplace else. So there's really no change there. Now, on the question of the leaning the lots, which is the next one down on page 12, Phil talked about leaning a lot. Dale talked about leaning a membership. I think we need to be clear that we're leaning a lot because I'm not sure what a membership is if it's not tied to that ownership. And so I think we have to be clear that we're leaning real estate. Because there's no other way, nothing else for us to put a lien on. Now, his language about the lien shall continue until the amounts secured thereby and all subsequent accruing amounts are fully paid and otherwise satisfied, I've included that language. I thought that was a useful addition.
And that wasn't in.
It wasn't in Phil's. No. Okay, on the next page, this is where we have the perfection of the lien language. Phil's language simply said the board may enforce the assessment lien by sale or foreclosure. Dale's was more elaborate in talking and making specific references to Utah code and then what priority our lien has in relation to some other liens that exist, and then noting that we have the right to collect on it. Item 18, 21 in Dale's is voting rights. This is going to be obviously going to require some discussion. Phil's document said essentially that we can suspend voting rights and we can terminate we can suspend the right to use common facilities and ranch property. Dale said that the board of directors may not suspend the voting rights of a member. I think I've pretty much.
I said it because of not being assessments and things, right?
Right, right.
Is that an arbitrary thing? I mean, you either can or can't, whatever you feel like to do.
Well, it depends what's in the covenants, right?
Right.
Because if it's in the covenants, then we all agree that these are the rules we're going to play by. And right now, we do suspend people's voting rights if they don't pay their dues. And so what our practice is consistent with Phil's language. Dale is suggesting we need to change that. I've gone along with Phil's suggestion on that and said we need to be able to suspend people's voting rights and the use of common facilities.
Well,
we need to go through that in a little bit, because I don't know. We need to go through that, because there's a couple things. It says, but may not be limited to receiving water from wells operated by the association. I don't know how it's very different. I mean, Lena's already, what difference does it make? Why do we go into detail of the tank
well,
of the water, the tank of the...
Because what we're saying is that there's an issue of leaning, of putting a lien against the real estate. Mm-hmm. There's also the issue of their right to use, to exercise the rights of membership. By using cabin facilities, getting water from the wells, that sort of stuff, and this is stipulating that that we have the power if the assessment remains unpaid, that we don't have to allow them to rent cabins, we don't have to allow them to take water out of the wells.
So they're dragging it out, making us push the whole system to get their money during that time. We shouldn't be baiting.
And one thing I really objected in that is if Larry pays his bill. Makes everything right, then the board can spank him for 60 days and not let him do a sanction against him and not let him be active for 60 days after he pays his fee.
Well, if it says that, I would agree we should change that. When you pay your money, you got to get your rights reinstated immediately.
Yeah, well,
let's
look at that one and kind of go over that one and we'll come back to it.
Dale had language on leases, lease payments, and the assignment of essentially membership rights through a lease. And I changed the language, and I hope I clarified things, and simply said that it is possible for a member, an owner member, to assign some or all of the rights and obligations pertaining to their membership, but they have to do some specific things to make that work. The lease has to specify which rights and obligations are being assigned. We need to be getting a copy of that so we know what's going on, and the leasee needs to receive a copy of the protective covenants and bylaws, and the lease has to be for at least 12 months. We don't want people to say, well, we leased it out for this weekend, so it's their responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's a lease, it's going to have to be at least 12 months. statement of account language was the same. Payment of encumbrances. By an encumbrancer, that was the same. Mortgage protection. Dale didn't have any language on that. I think that's part of coming in compliance with state law, so I kept it. That was the motivation for that. Plan review, there was some difference here. There was an item B and C in Phil's language that talked about county inspectors, and the board's going to encourage the county inspectors to go out and harass people. And all I've said is, look, you got to get your plans approved. We need to see a site plan. Yes, you need to go get a building permit. And that construction and improvements should be in compliance with state law and Kane County building and zoning board requirements. Now, I have added language, though, that you may be uncomfortable with. It shall be incumbent upon the board to facilitate enforcement of such legal requirements.
That means allow them to come in and...
Allow them to do it and make it possible for them to find out what's happening. Okay, so...
I think that's good.
That's all I said there. The liability language was the same in both. The commercial business or commercial activity, Phil had language on that. Dale did not. So I kept Phil's language that simply specifies again that unless we give specific permission, properties are for
private.
Right, they're residential uses. Okay. The validity and amendments. Clauses were the same. So that's where we are.
This makes a big difference.
Well, I hope it clarifies where the points of discussion need to be placed. So.
Yeah, it narrows it down a lot. That's the way I read it. It's really close. It comes with that last little bit.
So are we at a point then where are we going to now take this? Like Dale said, in the quiet of the moment, I'll go back and reconsider, and then they come back and have a full-on discussion.
I apologize for not getting it out to you sooner. It was a lot of work, and I just... I did email it to the three of you yesterday, and I'm surprised you haven't read it and digested it by now.
Oh! What time was that? 5 o'clock?
Closer to six.
Okay, we left at four. Check in mine at eight. I didn't have one.
They had to be after five because he left the office and didn't have it. It's all past me, and I said, I don't have anything.
I think that's smart. Listen, the things in mine, a lot of them were a modification of the pink book and the blue book that would have taken 18 more pages if you'd have added those in. So I think that this is a great summary.
We're getting down there. That's good.
Are there any of the points that you want to talk more about today?
No, let's let them digest and move on. We got other things to hit.
Not till we have a chance to read it.
Okay. Then we'll carry it forward till next month.
And in the meantime, you're working on that other part too.
I'm working the bylaws, and we'll try to get those in a similar format.
I just happen to have an extra one.
How do I have mine now?
I didn't take it.